Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki jai, Grantharaja Srimad Bhagavatama ki jai, Giridas Maharaja ki jai, Jayo Nitai Gopremana. So what did we discuss in our previous class?
This is the theme of this section of the Bhagavad Gita. Very good. Any other points?
In the initial stage, we have to practice nishedha, which is restrictions. This will remove the negative side of the spiritual life, and the positive side is attraction towards Krishna. Just like when a person is sick, he has to follow some diet restrictions as well as take medicine.
Good. Any other points?
Citing different verses, one should not associate with the coarse food with respect to the knowledge of self-realization, and with like a dancing dog in the hands of the body.
First verse of the section. That's good. Any other points?
You mentioned about devotees have to be very careful in associating with normal people in terms of everyday life, and we have to purify ourselves going back to the holy town every now and then, and also coming to the temple and associating with the devotees.
Important. Except I think we're the normal people. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Prabhupada said most people are devotees. So what does that mean? That means the spiritual world is three quarters of creation, material world. Non-devotees are actually in the minority. Even though we feel like we're in the minority, but actually we're in the majority.
Yep.
Most of the jivas are devotees. Any other points?
Association with materialistic people is more dangerous than suicide.
Also from the first paragraph.
The social division of the ashrama is actually, you know, based upon strong emphasis to control this urge for sex. So the brahmacharya is basically a training of how to overcome the lusty desires when one enters the ashrama of grihastha. And because there is inevitable contamination of the consciousness in that ashrama, then there is a vanaprastha whereby, you know, the austerities are practice,
so that
desire
to
have
visibly
sexual union, one can
get
detached and then one can be
down.
So it's
really
powerful.
Yeah, good. Good understanding. So, if we look at this section of the Bhagavatam, we look in chapter 29. Chapter 29 is called?
Explanation of the Path of Devotional Service.
Yeah, explanation of the Path of Devotional Service. So this means that Devahuti asks Kapila Dev in the beginning of 29th chapter, please describe to me about devotional service, about the time factor, and about the suffering of birth and death in this material world. So this is the content of the remainder of this chapter, of the this section of the Bhagavatam, the end of the third canto. So in chapter 29, he answers her question about devotional service. He describes mixed devotional service and then pure devotional service. Chapter 29 is very important, especially in terms of your exam. So you should study chapter 29 very carefully, like that. Then, Kapila Dev begins to describe, or begins to answer, Devahuti's question about, discuss about the miseries of birth and death. Because we need to hear about the miseries and the suffering in the material world, because it breeds detachment from the material energy. So therefore, in order to implant this spirit of renunciation within our heart, Kapila Dev speaks about the suffering that the living entity goes through in the material world, through the cycle of birth and death. So, in chapter 30, which is called
Description of
adverse fruitive activities, is described how the living entity may become materially entangled and perform vikama, upakama, means sinful activities. And when his consciousness becomes absorbed in performing sinful activities, then his reaction is that he is taken to the abode of Yamaraj. And by being taken to Yamaloka, the abode of Yamaraj, then he suffers intolerable suffering to make him detach from this these fruitive activities or this fruitive mentality. And then in the beginning of chapter 31, which is called the movements of the living entities, yeah, in the cycle of birth and death. So in the chapter 31, it describes how the living entity once again gets born into the womb of a human mother. And in the womb of a human mother, then the suffering that the living entity goes through in the first 10 verses also describe the living entity within the womb of the mother and what the suffering is like within the womb. And then it describes in the next 10 verses or so, verses 10 to 20, how a pious living entity or a devotee prays in the womb to the Lord to please be engaged once again in devotional service. And then from verses say 20 to 30, it describes how a living entity comes out of the womb and then suffers as a baby, then as a child, and then as a youth. So basically what Kapila Devi is trying to instruct us or impart to us is that the material world is a place of suffering. From the highest planet in the material world to the lowest, all are places of repeated birth. There's actually no happiness in the material world. It is different types of suffering. You suffer in the womb, you suffer before you enter the womb, right, in hellish sufferings from performing impious activities, negative material activities. You suffer, then you enter the womb, you suffer, then you become a child, you suffer, then you become a boy, you become a youth. And then, in the end of the section that we've just began, to finish the chapter, it describes what is the cause of our bondage in the material world. Right? And the cause of the bondage in the material world is Purusha Bhav. Purusha Bhav means that we want to be the enjoyer. We want to enjoy the material energy. That's why we left the spiritual world. Because we want to be Purusha. We want to imitate Krishna. We want to be the enjoyers in this material world. And what is the main way that Maya traps us when we have this enjoying spirit? It is by attraction to the opposite sex. And by this attraction to the opposite sex, then we become bound and tightly shackled into this, into our attachment in this material world. Even if we know that we should be detached, but if we become attached to the opposite sex, the power of Maya is so powerful that it forcibly pulls you away from spiritual life. Even though Arjuna says to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, even a man of intelligence can be pulled away. Arjuna says to Krishna, what is this bala? What is this powerful, strong force which forcibly pulls away the intelligence from spiritual life? Krishna says, karma esha, krodha esha, like this. It is lust. This lust means attraction to the opposite sex. And this comes from Purusha Bhav, or wanting to be the enjoyer in this material world. This is how Maya binds everyone in this material world. So by this desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, we become bound, and when we become bound, then we suffer birth and death. But the foolish materialistic living entity thinks that, well, I'm enjoying sex, I'm enjoying a relationship with the opposite sex in any species of life, therefore I will tolerate my suffering. Because the enjoyment of sex, Prabhupada says, the pleasure coating of the genitals. By that little sex pleasure that the living entity gets, he thinks all the suffering is worthwhile. I will tolerate all the suffering because I get a little sexual pleasure with the opposite sex in any species of life, and then I will continue in this cycle of birth and death. This is how Maya works. This is how Maya binds everyone in this material world. But the end result is suffering. So we are in the material world because we want to enjoy, and because we want to enjoy, then Maya gives us facility to enjoy, and she traps us, but then we just suffer and we're kept away from Krishna since time immemorial. So Kapila Dev is instructing us to be wary of Maya, to understand Maya's potency like that. So last week we went from verse 34 to 38. Is this far we went? No.
38,
because you said this church is very interesting and you should not go fast. Yeah, because I wanted to cover tonight also, so I thought we went a bit further. Okay, that's okay. No problem. So, what I'll do is I'll reread verses 34 to 38 and make a few just summary points for those who weren't here, and then we'll continue to the end of the chapter. Because this is a very important section and very necessary that we study this section deeply to understand how and why we are bound within this material world. Any points?
A person who commits an impious activity is subjected to such severe punishment in Yamaloka. How do we remember that what has happened? Because the person commits the same mistakes again and again. But that happens in the subtle body there.
Happens in the subtle body, and it's the impression is still carried within the mind.
But I'm committing the same mistake life after life, life after life. For the last 155 trillion years, if you take Lord Brahma's ages 50 years, I've been in the material world so many times. I've visited Yamaloka so many times. I was subjected to such severe punishment, but nothing of that impression continues in me because I continue to perform the same activity.
Something is there, because inherently we all know that these activities are wrong. So something is there, some impression is made in the consciousness. It's not a total waste like that. But the nature of material enjoyment is that it is so powerful, even in this lifetime. We've gone through periods where we've suffered very intensely, but then after some period of time, if we get that suffering, we become illusioned by material enjoyment once again. That's how powerful Maya is. That's why Kapila Dev is pointing this out, Maya's. But deep within our consciousness, the impression is given this. We know this place is a place of suffering. I think most people know that. But still, because Maya is so powerful, then they become overwhelmed, they become captured by that spirit to enjoy.
When Rishabhadev was threatened by King Raghuvendra to beat him, he was saying the punishment in this material world is like a beating a dead horse. No use. They're only fortunate if they come in contact with the spiritual process to get them out, because they can go up and down all the time, because they don't know for the better until they come to the spiritual personality to take them out. That goes on and on.
So is it for this reason that the sannyas is banned in this age? Is it for the reason that, especially in yoga, the Maya is very much powerful? So one cannot practically, the scriptures are really, you know, disconcerting that it is beyond the consciousness. Really, sannyas is banned.
Yeah, because in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult to be a sannyasi. So therefore, it is not recommended. Although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur re-established Varnashram Dharma by taking sannyas himself and also giving many of his disciples sannyas initiation. So therefore it must be done with great caution, because it's very difficult in Kali Yuga to do these kind of, to have that kind of fixedness.
Therefore, association with sadhus is most important.
Prabhupada makes his point again tonight.
One clarification,
in India, there's
Indian type of cooking actually promotes this sort of lusty desire. Has there been any change in the way in which the ingredients are reported with an ISKCON movement so that that propensity is somewhat diluted, because the spices we add actually promote lusty desires?
Like?
Any spice we add, it promotes the desire for enjoyment.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one should eat food in the mode of goodness. So it should not be too hot, too salty, too pungent. He says these things should be moderate. Spice is good, but moderation, that's all.
But that doesn't happen. That's not happening.
Well, then that's not Ayurveda. That's not proper cooking. Prabhupada cook like that. If devotees don't know how to cook, then they put too much of this, too much of that, too much of this. You know, but that's not Vedic cooking. Just like at the farm on the weekend, and we were chopping the wood. You know, Dave and Regis was having a retreat this weekend coming, so we have to prepare the wood. So the devotees came, about 5 or 6 devotees came to help chop the wood. And, we cook khichdi, same as like we cook here, but it's not like floating in ghee and overly spiced and too much turmeric and like that. It's just nice, simple. All devotees say, oh, so tasty, so light, so dodgy. This is Ayurveda. Not this put too much, too much, too much, everything deep fried, and that's not good for the health.
I had I wanted to send an email regarding the Janmashtami feast. We had midnight feast. The whole feast was floating in ghee, not only from the cholesterol point of view, but actually it's not really good the way the whole thing was prepared. But I took it back saying that maybe I'm offending somebody there.
No, but a feast is different. A feast is a feast. A feast means you cook opulently, but you don't eat like that every day of the week.
Every devotee who cooks, he thinks that he is cooking only once in a while, and therefore he puts his share of oil or his share of ghee, and therefore on a regular basis you have same items.
No, when you're cooking for the deities, you cook opulently. Doesn't mean it has to be floating in ghee or oil. That's not opulent, right? But it means when you cook for the deities, you cook opulently. But when you cook for the general devotee prasad, right, then we cook simply. Nice. Prabhupada said that prasad should be sumptuous, which means palatable, but he said not that you should take too much. When it's too opulent, everyone wants to eat too much. You know, it's pizza and all these things, and just like everyone loses control, and it's like it becomes like a shark frenzy, and it's not a good consciousness. Prasad should be well cooked, but simple, palatable, nice, but healthy and like this. At New Underground, we're establishing Vedic culture, so we're cooking like according to Vedic system and all these things, because you want to train, because you know heavy prasad is not good. It's true, it does agitate their consciousness.
The spice is also very used in the cooking because of the digesting, and certain spices are used for carbohydrates, proteins, to help with the digestion. And also they have healing properties, like turmeric stops proliferation of the cancer cells. Yeah. If combined with like pepper, so they have really healing properties. And ginger balances all the doshas, so it's very, very good for the body.
Yeah, we should follow what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says food in the mode of goodness is like this. Not too salty, not too pungent, not too sour, not decomposing. He says all these things. So we should just follow Ayurveda. It's very simple. Okay, verse 34. One should not associate with a coarse fool who is bereft of the knowledge of self-realization and who is no more than a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. So Kapila Dev is emphasizing here very strong words. A sadhu means one who cuts. So a sadhu's words will be very cutting. So Lord Kapila Dev is speaking a very cutting way. He says that we should not become a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. This is his very heavy language, but he's instructing us like that, that we should not become controlled by the opposite sex. He says, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, do not become controlled by the opposite sex or people who are attached to the opposite sex for material enjoyment. This is the emphatic point of this section. Right? The whole point is that we should not increase our enjoying spirit. We want to increase our detachment from matter, and we want to become more attached to Krishna.
So therefore, one has to overcome this attachment to the opposite sex. So therefore, one should be very careful about associating with the opposite sex and associating with those who are attached to the opposite sex. Because by their association, it is the gateway to hell. It will increase our enjoying spirit. We want to become detached from this world, not become more desirous of enjoying. It's like yesterday, I went to my mother's place, and me and my family was there, and we all gathered, and we all had nice, prasadam, and she cooked nice vegetarian food, and we offered, and so. But television is in the background, and everywhere you look, there is magazines and everything. It's just all sense gratification. It just stimulates the consciousness to try and enjoy in this material world. A devotee is not interested in enjoying the material world. A devotee wants to become detached from the material world. Therefore, the guru of the demons, his name is Shukracharya. And he has one eye. One eye. He is the demon, he is the guru of the demons, the asuras. And his representative in Kali Yuga is the one-eyed guru, whose name is? T.V. One-eyed guru. Whatever the guru says, everyone just nods. Guru says, do this. Guru says, buy that. Guru says, go there. This is the representative of, this is the guru of the demons, actually. So contaminating to the consciousness. Just like we were sitting there yesterday and this stupid television is in the background. So I got it and I walked out on the back deck of my mother's house and I threw it over the neighbor's fence and smashed everywhere. Like that. No, I didn't really do it. But I said to my mother, I said, turn it off. I said, what is the necessity? No one's even watching it. Just have this ridiculous noise in the background just contaminating and polluting everyone's consciousness. And the impressions, all the impressions, are just how to enjoy in this material world. And it's ridiculous. And people make such fools of themselves. And just like they had that television show, Australian Idol. And you see all these people getting up. Everyone wants to be an idol, right? Increase the Purusha Bhav. I want to be an enjoyer. I want to control. I want to be a star. So everyone gets up there on the television, they make fools of themselves. Right? And they're all crying because they didn't get chosen to be in the top, final group and like that. And it's just increasing everyone's desire to become the enjoyer in the material world. It's very contaminating association like that. It's all based on sex life, factually speaking. So therefore, if one is serious about becoming attached to Krishna, then what is the... one has to become detached from the material world. That means one has to reduce one's association with the material energy. So if you renounce your television, this will be a very good start and a very good step in the right direction. I have to say this.
No.
Yes.
Please. Watching the news, okay?
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Exceptional handling.
Huh?
In programming, we call it as exceptional handling. So
yeah, like that. Okay. When I was a brahmachari for 8 years, living in the ashram here, so I didn't have any television, right? No television, no radio, no newspaper. Everything I needed to hear, I heard. If something is actually important, I remember when September 11th happened? 2001? I was in the temple room, I was chanting my japa. 5 o'clock in the morning. This event only happened a few hours beforehand in our time in Australia. 5 o'clock in the morning, one devotee ran up to me, like to Jason. He said, the Twin Towers have collapsed, planes, America's under, like all this. I heard about it within hours of it happening because it was actually noteworthy. But most of what's on there, honestly, you look at the news, what's on there? Honestly, what do you need to know? So I'll give you my advice. My advice is get rid of the Shukracharya. That's my advice. Otherwise, just watch the news.
National Geographic or 60 Minutes, and then, you know, and then there's 60 Minutes. And then there's, you know, and then just goes a little bit more. And then next minute Maya creeps in, and then, oh, the 8:30 movie looks good. Right? It's okay when the Australian Open comes on, right? Okay. The Olympics. Kabuji, the Olympics. Where does it stop? You know? I've seen Star Wars 1, but I have to see number 2 and 3. When does it stop? Like that. I could go on and on. Do you get the point? Like that. You make your own choice. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, everyone has to fly their own plane. That's the point. Everyone has to fly their own plane. Like that. All the advice, all the instruction is given. That's the point. Now you make your decision. I'm not going to come and destroy your television. But if you want me to, the infatuation and bondage which accrue to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as that resulting from attachment to a woman or to fellowship with men who are fond of women. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the Vedic system, then segregation between the sexes was practiced. Just like we have Bhagavatam class, we have Kirtan, we take prasad, the sexes sit in opposite parts of the temple. When we have Bhakti Bhai Bhav class, we have segregation. Now, this is necessary for spiritual advancement. You cannot make spiritual advancement if you freely associate with the opposite sex, because it just increases the enjoying spirit and it distracts the consciousness away from Krishna. So therefore one must be restricted in one's association. If you want to associate with the opposite sex, you get married. And then you have a wife and you have a husband and you drive each other nuts. Right? And that's married life. Right? That's the way the system works. So, if you want to associate, then it must be regulated. It cannot be unregulated.
Licensed.
Licensed, yeah. Licensed means there must be prohibition. Right? It doesn't mean that you can unlimitedly associate. The material world, it is unlimited association. Even anyway, get into it. The point is that the material world, it just means the more you associate with the opposite sex, the more you become bound in this material world. Therefore, you have to restrict your association with the opposite sex, because the more you associate, the more Maya entangles you. Because the enjoying spirit, it increases, right? And we want to decrease that enjoying spirit. Like that. So this is the lesson which is given. At the sight of his own daughter, Brahma was bewildered by her charms, and shamelessly ran up to her in the form of a stag when she took the form of a hind. So, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they are not like us. They are not attracted. Brahma did this. This was an instruction. Shiva did it. He was attracted to the spiritual energy, not the material energy. So it's different. But the point is there, right? The instruction is there. Be very careful when associating with the opposite sex. Srila Prabhupada says within the purport, do not associate intimately or privately, right, with the mother, the sister, or the daughter. Why? Because the Bhagavatam is instructing us to be very careful, because the enjoying spirit can manifest like that. So therefore we are instructed, we are warned by the Vedic teachings to be very careful in our association with the opposite sex, because it can become very contaminating to the consciousness. The enjoying spirit can overcome us at any time. So we have to be very, very careful. Do not compromise in your association with the opposite sex. Don't associate intimately. Just like don't put yourself into a situation where you're with a member of the opposite sex in private, where there's intimate association. Right? Do not compromise that. Only the husband and wife can associate intimately like that. But with others, then we should be very careful. It's dangerous like that. Many devotees have become distracted and have left spiritual life because of this situation. Mataji? Okay. Amongst all kinds of living entities begotten by Brahman, namely men, demigods and animals, none but the sage Narayan is immune to the attraction of Maya in the form of a woman.
This stag and hind, can you tell me?
Yeah, male deer and female deer. Just try to understand the mighty strength of my Maya in the shape of a woman, who by the mere movement of her eyebrows can keep even the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. The original rasa, or the original attraction between man and woman, exists in the spiritual world. It is called adiras. Adiras means the original attraction. It is between Radha and Krishna. Prabhupada explains in the purport, where does it come from? Where does this mundane sexual maituni bhav, right, or this mundane attraction between the sexes, this potency, where does that come from? That comes from the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, Krishna, who is the Purusha, Adi Purusha, the Maha Purusha, he is the original enjoyer. Within his personality is the propensity to be attracted to the opposite sex. Right? So to facilitate that desire, that spiritual desire of God to enjoy, then his own Shakti manifests as Hladini Shakti. His pleasure potency manifests as Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani, her potency is that she attracts Krishna. And this is the original rasa, the Adi rasa. But it is pure spiritual love. Narottama Das Thakur says it is the difference between gold purified in 1,000 fires and iron. Right? Iron is a base metal. It doesn't have a lot of value. But pure gold, which has been purified thousands of times, that is valuable. So the attraction between Radha and Krishna is purely spiritual. And what is pervertedly reflected in this world is something material. It is a reflection of that original love, which then comes out as kam or lust. It is not comparable. The two things are not comparable. Therefore, one must approach the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam very carefully, because we're dealing with pure spiritual love. And factually speaking, Prabhupada actually mentions in this section of the Bhagavatam, to become spiritually realized, one's heart has to be free from material contamination. So if one still has material lust within one's heart, it's very difficult to actually understand the pastimes between Radha and Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami says, Srimati Radharani is so potent and so powerful that she herself is enough to satisfy Krishna. Jiva Goswami explains that it is not necessary for anyone else to even exist. Because by Radharani's devotion, she is so expert, daksha means so expert in her service, she can completely satisfy Krishna just by herself. But because she is so soft-hearted and so compassionate, then she desires that other living entities will exist to also experience the pleasure of serving Krishna. And it's only because of her desire that the other living entity, because Krishna knows it will make her happy, that the other living entities will be engaged in his service, that he expands himself and accepts the service of everyone else. So understanding Radha and Krishna is the absolute truth. And actually the Srimad Bhagavatam is entirely meant to establish this principle of the topmost, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions this, that the topmost principle of prema or love is expressed between the gopis of Vrindavan and Krishna. And of all the gopis of Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani is the topmost. She's the Parameshwari, which means she's the supreme leader of all the gopis. her position is so exalted we cannot even estimate what Radharani's exalted position is. And we're very fortunate because there's only one week until Radhashtami will come. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, if you want to overcome mundane sex life, ultimately, as we said last week, then in the beginning you must practice brahmacharya and so forth in order to purify your consciousness and detach yourself from the material energy. But ultimately, the only way to purify the consciousness is to become attracted to the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, because they have the potency. Shukadev Goswami mentions this in the final verse of chapter 33 in the 10th canto, that by hearing of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, all of the lust within the heart will be removed. Right? But one has to become qualified to hear those pastimes. That's the point. Any questions or comments? One who aspires to reach the culmination of yoga and has realized his self by rendering service unto me should never associate with an attractive woman. For such a woman is declared in the scripture to be the gateway to hell for the advancing devotee. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that one must practice brahmacharya. What does brahmacharya mean? Celibacy. It means restriction in associating with the opposite sex. One must practice brahmacharya, which means one must restrict oneself from associating with the opposite sex. That is brahmacharya. And there are eight principles of brahmacharya, like that, which I think last time I was asked to give those eight principles. And I don't have them on me. Like that. Maybe by tomorrow. If I remember, I'll try to get them. Yeah, principles. So there are eight principles of brahmacharya. One of them is one should not think of the opposite sex in one's mind. One of them is that one should not talk whimsically with the opposite sex. One is that one should not have like dallying or whimsical association with the opposite sex. One is that one should not contemplate sex life. One is that one should not engage in illicit sex. These are eight of the principles of brahmacharya. That's maybe five of them or so forth like that. So the point is that one must practice brahmacharya if one wants to advance in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, what is the nonsense that yogis have come from the east, like Rajneesh and different personalities, and they're saying you have as much sex as you want and still you can become a perfected yogi. And Prabhupada says, where is that said in the Vedic scriptures? And we're in the Bhagavatam, does it say anywhere, have as much sex as you like and still you'll become perfect as a yogi? Yeah, it doesn't say. Right? Kashyapa did not do it, Kardama did not do it. Right? None of the great sages ever practiced that or showed that example or taught that. So then how can these bogus gurus, and Prabhupada was so attacking to these bogus gurus. I mean, Prabhupada was smashing it, and sometimes we wonder, why is Prabhupada so heavy? Right, because Prabhupada was pointing out, where is the authority? Right? How can you come to the West and bewilder all the people by saying that you can engage in illicit sex and still you can become a self-realized soul? There's nowhere in the Vedas where this is mentioned. So therefore, it is mentioned, if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, then you must practice brahmacharya. Otherwise not possible to make actual advancement. And then Prabhupada says within the purport that in the second canto of the second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it mentions that how does Prabhupada say it? He says, to understand the science of God can only come when material contamination is cleansed from the heart. If you want to understand Krishna, you have to get to the platform of nishtha. Right? Nishtha means when you are free from the contamination of calm and lobe, which means lust and greed, which is under the influence of the modes of passion and ignorance. So when you become arise up above the influence of the mode of passion and ignorance, you come to the platform where lust and greed are not affecting your consciousness, then you can actually begin to understand the signs of God.
But otherwise, you have to still practice all the basics.
Don't try to jump artificially. Prabhupada said, like a monkey. Don't just jump from one tree to the other tree to the other tree. Like that. I'm jumping, I'm making so much progress. But you're not actually making progress. You want to advance so quickly and you want to hear about Radha and Krishna and all these things, but has the heart actually been cleansed? This is the message of the Bhagavatam. First cleanse the heart, then you'll have the adhikar or the qualification to approach Radha and Krishna. The woman created by the Lord is the representation of Maya. And one who associates with such Maya by accepting services must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. So Prabhupada makes interesting points in the purport. Asipu, you want to read the purport? You listen to some of the things that Prabhupada says in this purport.
Sometimes it happens that a rejected well is covered by grass, and an unwary traveller who does not know of the existence of the well falls down, and his death is assured. Similarly, association with a woman begins when one accepts service from her, because woman is especially created by the Lord to give service to the man. By accepting her service, a man is entrapped. If he is not intelligent enough to know that she is the gateway to hellish life, he may indulge in her association very liberally. This is restricted for those who aspire to ascend to the transcendental platform. Even 50 years ago in Hindu society, such association was restricted. A wife could not see her husband during the daytime. Householders even had different residential quarters. The internal quarters of a residential house were for women, and the external quarters were for the men. Sentence of service rendered by a woman may appear very pleasing, but one should be very cautious in accepting such service, because it is clearly saying that such woman is the gateway to death or forgetfulness of oneself. She blocks the path of spiritual realization.
So what is some of the interesting points for the Prabhupada?
This rule applies to the service of the wife too. This applies to the service of the wife to the husband.
To a degree. Because Prabhupada is saying that the husband and wife would not associate during the day.
But the wife would still cook that service.
Not saying no service. Just saying, even within Grihastha Ashram, there's some restriction. Not that there's just like unlimited association all the time.
Yeah, but they say here service, if a man accepts service from a woman, I was asking whether that applies to the wife, to the husband, because it's natural for the wife to serve the husband.
No, she has to serve. So Prabhupada's saying that there must be some restriction. Even in the association. Too much association with the opposite sex, even if it's your wife, you'll become bewildered. So it means be careful. Like that, isn't it? Any other points?
Residential quarters are also different. Internal and outside.
Yeah.
Women inside and men outside.
You have in your house?
Used to be in India.
Any other points?
In Islamic culture, they have their burqa system where, right from the head to the toe, the woman are covered in the black gown.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not, but they have put that physical curtain so that even by mistake one does not see it.
Yeah, it's not Vedic though. This doesn't say anywhere in the Vedas the woman has to walk around in a black coat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're
whatever, but there's nothing, it's not Vedic. It's not Vedic. Women should wear sari and be chaste, like that. That's Vedic culture. So as Prabhupada is saying here, that even amongst the husband and wife there has to be some restriction on the association. If you associate too much, right, first thing that happens,
right? You drive each other nuts. That's what happens, basically. Too much association between the husband and wife is not... Too much is not good, because then you just begin to annoy each other like that, and then so many problems come, which we all know about. Yeah. I can see by the looks on your faces, you all have vigyan, realization, so I don't have to elaborate. And the other point is that you become too attached like that. There should be, associations should be somewhat restricted. Of course, in the Vedic culture, it was so much easier because the men and women would live in a familial atmosphere where there was extended families, and you know, the women had many people to associate with, and the men had many people to associate with. And Prabhupada says even during the day, the men and women would not associate so much. The women would take care of their duties, the men would take care of their duties. In the evening, they would come together, but there was group association. It wasn't that you were so much together by yourselves. And that's the problem with the nuclear families that have been created by the modern society, is that the husband and wife just live by themselves in their own little box, you know, somewhere. And they drive each other nuts, you know, because they're just, you know, it's much easier to be, to relieve tension when you're in a group situation, right? Just like when the husband and wife are just with each other too much of the time, naturally you begin to argue and you begin to stress each other out and you begin to get on each other's nerves and then tensions arise. But if there's other people around, automatically you become formal in your behaviour and respectful in your speech and so forth. You don't say things that you would not otherwise say. So therefore, this is why this Vedic method is being mentioned. Of course, the way society is these days, we don't live like that, but still, the association has to be somewhat, you know, a little bit, somehow you have to incorporate a little bit of restriction in there. But at the same time, it's, you know, to strike a nice balance. So you're associating enough, so it's not that you're alien to each other, but at the same time, not that it becomes so intimate that your attachments just increase and increase and increase. And you become materially bewildered by the material energy. That's not the point.
Prabhupada mentions later on also that man becomes a lady in their next life, and a lady becomes a man if they are too attached. If the husband is attached to wife, he becomes a woman.
So, how do we understand that the self-realized souls like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who have fallen gender, it's very self-realized souls like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is a Acharya. We had 14 children, and not all of them were devotees.
No, I think all Bhaktivinoda Thakur's children are devotees to different degrees. They weren't all like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was a pure devotee. But I think they're all devotees, as far as I understand. So what's the question?
Here is basically from the description that try and stay away from the woman, except, you know, the service is bare minimum. And here is an acharya of...
He didn't associate. His wife's name is Bhagavati. She was a great Vaishnavi. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you read his biography, they didn't associate so much. He followed more or less what's here. There's no problem with having a large family. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his son, who was a Naishtika Brahmachari, said that, you know, if I could guarantee my children be Krishna conscious, I would have 100 children. So there's no problem having a large family, that's not restricted. But the point is, are you becoming free from Maya? That's the point. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the ideal. He is often called the Grihastha Acharya, because he taught us how to live ideal Grihastha life. You know, 12 children, right? Big position. I mean, powerful position. The most powerful Indian bodied person in the British Raj. Most highly positioned person in India at that time. Like that. Extremely powerful, extremely responsible. He was the in charge of the Jagannath Mandir, you know, writing all those books, beginning the Namhada preaching, rediscovered Mayapur while he was having 12 children and working a full-time job. So he was showing us what the example is like that. Okay. Mainly we don't have a lot of kids these days is because it costs so much to bring them up. That's why, you know, people have 1 kid or 2 kids. So as soon as you start having five, you can't even have 5 or 6 these days. Not even, it's not possible. Like that. Even like, you know, if you go back to my parents and then my if you go back to our grandparents, my grandparents, like back in their generation, everyone had 5, 6, 8 kids. It was just common. People can't do it these days. It's difficult. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that we become too much attached to the opposite sex. But he points out that one should become serious about understanding one's swarup. One's swarup means one's spiritual identity. We should try to understand who we actually are in our eternal relationship with Krishna. This is what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching. Do not become so bound up or so caught up in understanding your material identity. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says, I am not a Kshatriya, I am not a Vaishya, I am not a Sudra, I am not a Brahmana. I'm not a brahmacharya, I'm not a grihastha, I'm not a vanaprastha, I'm not a sannyasi. Gopi bhatu pada kamalayo dasa dasa anudasa. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the master of the gopis. So that is the interest of the devotees. That's what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching. Understand your eternal relationship with Krishna. Do not become bewildered by the opposite sex. Because as the Bhagavad Gita points out here, if you become too absorbed in the opposite sex, you take birth as the opposite sex. That's how it works. That's how men become women, women become men. It's all Maya. But the Bhagavad Gita is teaching, go beyond this material platform and understand your swarupa, your original relationship with Krishna. A woman, therefore, should consider her husband, her house, and her children to be the arrangement of the external energy of the Lord for her death, just as the sweet singing of the hunter is the death for the deer. So, the Bhagavad Gita is mentioning here that just as attachment to the man, attachment to the woman is the bondage for the man, and attachment to the man is the bondage for the woman. And it's the same. The same type of Maya. Right? That the man represents so many things for the woman. Right? And the woman represents so many things for the man. Subtly it may be different, but the attachment is the same. And if you stay attached to the opposite sex, then you simply have to be born again and again and again within this world. Right? So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the only way to overcome these attachments is to engage in Krishna consciousness. One has to perform bhakti yoga. Because if you don't engage your senses in the service of Krishna, then you'll just absorb your senses in the service of the opposite sex. And Deha Pacha Kala Tradishu Atman Sanyeshwa Satsvapi. Bhagavatam says, as soon as you become attached to the opposite sex, then you become attached to children and paraphernalia, and it just extends. Right? Adishu means all the things connected to family life, paraphernalia. It becomes more and more complicated. So therefore, one has to become serious about becoming Krishna conscious. Now, how is this attained for a grihastha? Because all of us are grihasthas. Yeah, one has to put the Krishna in the center. What does that mean practically? It means you have to put the deity in the center. Right? So it means in your home, Krishna has to become the center. Right? It means you have to have your altar where you have either your deity, or you may have a picture of Panchatattva or Radha Krishna, whatever it is. But the point is that altar, the deity, has to be the center of your home. Right? Your function, everything in the home centers around the deity, right? Not the television. Right? The television does not take the center place in the home. You see, when you go to most people's houses, where's the television? It's in the most prominent place in the home. It gets the best place. Because the guru should have the asana. So therefore, put him in the best place. Like that. And it becomes prominent.
But then your consciousness becomes absorbed in the most prominent thing. So therefore, who should be the most prominent member of the house? It should be the deity. And the house should be an ashrama. Wherever you look, it should remind you of Krishna. That's what the house is for. So if you live in that consciousness and Krishna becomes in the center, the deity becomes in the center, then by Krishna being the center of your consciousness, you lose your attachment to the opposite sex. You become a grihasta as opposed to a grihamedi. Because a grihamedi is just someone who is attached to the opposite sex. The whole life just centers around the opposite sex. Right? I have to make my wife happy, I have to make my children happy, I have to make my husband happy, and then I'm successful. But that's not possible in any case. When was the last time your wife was completely happy with you? When was the last time your husband was completely happy with you? It never happens anyway, so what's the point? Why put all the energy into it if it never happens? I want the perfect relationship, then I'll be, what is the perfect relationship? Anyone's got a perfect relationship? I don't know anyone who's got a perfect relationship. Like that. The only people I've heard of that have a perfect relationship, they're in these pictures. They have perfect relationships. Radha and Krishna have a perfect relationship. Rukmini and Dwarkadish have a perfect relationship. Satyabhama and Krishna have a perfect relationship. But everything else is never going to be perfect. So why put all your energy into something which is not going to be perfect? Put your energy into re-establishing your relationship with Krishna. Then you'll be satisfied. Then you'll be happy. Due to his particular type of body, the materialistic living entity wanders from one planet to another, following fruitive activities. In this way, he involves himself in fruitive activities and enjoys the result incessantly. So Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the living entity, he quotes the verse that Mahaprabhu speaks in his teachings to Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jiva Guru Krishna Prasate Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. That the living entity, Brahmanda Brahmite, is travelling around the universe for lifetimes on the samsara chakra, which means sometimes he elevates to become a deva, and then sometimes he goes down to become a germ. So he's continuously moving about in the material cycle of birth and death. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jiva. Bhagyavana means a
fortunate
soul. Someone becomes fortunate. How do you become fortunate? Guru Krishna Prasate Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, you get an opportunity to engage in bhakti, in devotional service. That is good fortune. So therefore, the purpose of ISKCON is to create good fortune for all the living entities, to make them Bhagyavana Jivas, to make them fortunate. Just like we've become fortunate, we have to make others also fortunate. How do we make them fortunate?
Krishna.
Yeah, by engaging them in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti. So this is the purpose of ISKCON, to engage everyone. Prabhupada says within the universe, everyone in the universe must be engaged in the service of Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. So either you preach directly or you assist the preachers. Just like Devamrita Swami, His Holiness has just arrived. He's just upstairs now. He's staying here for 9 days, like that. So either you preach directly or you serve those who preach directly. You assist them, you maintain them, you facilitate their preaching, like that. So either way, you either directly you preach or you assist those who. Mahaprabhu says, Yari deke tari kaha Krishna upadesh amara agaya guru hana tara edesh. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, you tell them about Krishna. Krishna upadesh. The instructions of Krishna. Yari deke tari kaha Krishna upadesh. Amara agaya guru hana. On my order, you become gurus. On my order, you deliver your land. Prabhu Datta Desh. The place where your Prabhu, your master, has given you to preach
that place you deliver everyone. That is your responsibility. Srila Prabhupada says before the Grihastha takes prasad, he has to stand at his front door and shout three times, prasad, prasad, prasad. And anyone who comes, he must feed them. That is your obligation. In other words, as a Grihastha, your preaching is that everyone who lives close to you, you must somehow engage them in Krishna consciousness. That is your responsibility. What that say? You have to give prasad to your neighbors. Isn't it, Yogi? Just like that man who lives across from you. He's just an ordinary guy, right? But Yogi gives him prasad all the time, like that, and now he's becoming very, very favorable to the devotees. Sometimes he says, oh, do you have any of this prasad? Isn't it, you told him?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, do you have any of that one? Or that one?
But the Robin Trish, the one behind.
Behind.
Yeah.
They ask for prasad. Yeah. So then you make them Krishna conscious. You make them favorable to Krishna, like that. And then in this way we will take over the earth. If every devotee makes those who surround him Krishna conscious, then it will spread out. This is how we must spread Krishna consciousness. It is the duty of everyone in this movement, in this one, to preach. Prabhupada said it is the family business. Just like you go to India, you have Mr. Patel and sons. You go to the shop, right? It says Mr. Patel and sons. It's the family business, right? You join ISKCON, right? You're part of the family now, right? So you have to take up the business. What's the business? Preach. Because that was Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada's mood was just preach Krishna consciousness. Give everyone Krishna consciousness. So we preach directly, and especially we assist those who are empowered preachers, like His Holiness Indrajumna Swami, His Holiness Devamrita Swami, Burujan Prabhu, Japataka Swami, so many of them. Serve them, facilitate their preaching. Okay. In this way, the living entity gets a suitable body with a material mind and senses according to his fruitive activities. When the reaction of his particular activity comes to an end, that end is called death. And when a particular type of reaction begins, that beginning is called
birth.
So Prabhupada points out that this is the nature of the material world. This is what Devahuti was asking Kapila Dev about. Please explain to me about the suffering of birth and death. So he's explaining that if you get caught up in fruitive activities, trying to be an enjoyer in the material world, it simply leads to repeated birth and death. And then you will suffer so much. People are so fearful of death. But Bhagavatam is saying nothing to fear. What is there to fear? Devotees aren't really fearful of death. You'll see if devotees are very, if they have deep nishta or deep faith, deep shraddha, they're not fearful of death like that, because they have Krishna, they know that Krishna is there. Like Radhana Swami says, death is all attractive for a devotee. This means you'll meet Krishna once again. So what is the fear for the devotee like that? The fear is only there for the materialists, because I identify with the body, therefore they suffer. Therefore Devahuti says, explain about the suffering that goes on. By hearing about it, we can detach ourselves from it and then become transcendentally situated. When the eyes lose their power to see colour or form due to morbid affliction of the optic nerve, the sense of sight becomes deadened. The living entity, who is the seer of both the eyes and the sight, loses his power of vision. In the same way, when the physical body, the place where perception of objects occurs, is rendered incapable of perceiving, that is known as death. When one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, that is called birth. So Prabhupada says when the purport that the soul does not die. This is the nature of, this is the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no birth. There is no death for the soul. We do not die. So therefore, because we do not die, there is no need to fear death. Srila Prabhupada says, it is simply when the instrument becomes dysfunctional. Right? When the instrument is dysfunctional, then that is death. Yeah? Just like you can't use this machine anymore, then it's broken. It's useless. It's what do they call it when the computer dies?
Crash.
Is it like a final crash or something? Isn't crash when it crashes and then you fix it again?
German, they say kaput.
Kaput. What that? So everything will break down eventually. Right? Every machine has its duration of life. And then eventually that's it. It's kaput. Right? Useless. You can't do anything with it anymore. So the material body is like that. Prabhupada said, when the instrument becomes dysfunctional, that's death. Right? Just no good anymore. Right? And then what happens? Right? If you're unfortunate, you get another instrument. You get a new one. And then you use that for some time, you become all bewildered, as Kapila Dev explains. You become bewildered and you try to enjoy it, but then you just, it grinds down to a halt once again. Yeah? So if one is a Bhagyavana Jeeva, a fortunate soul, he goes back to the spiritual world. And if he goes back to the spiritual world, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you never have to return again to this material world. Therefore, one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as soul, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the duty of every living entity is to overcome one's attachment to this material world. And if you overcome your attachment to the material world, you'll overcome your fear of birth and death. Now how is this best achieved? According to what Prabhupada says in the purport, what is the best way to become detached in this material world? It was stated in chapter 25 by Kapila Dev.
Never stay in a comfort zone.
Yeah, but what does Kapila say? Yeah, one has to become attached to sadhus. Because by associating with sadhus, you get their quality. What is their quality? They are detached from this world and they are attached to Krishna. So by associating with the sadhus, we also become, gradually by their association, by their kripa, we become detached from this material world and attached to Krishna. And then we have no fear. Just like the sadhus have no fear. Just like you saw when Sridhar Swami left this world and different devotees, Niguna Prabhu, and different devotees have left this world. They become fearless. Abhay. Abhaya means no fear of death. Why? Because a sadhu has no fear. Because he will attain Krishna. That is his desire. So therefore by their association we will also get that consciousness. That is the consciousness in the Bhagavatam. Consciousness in the Bhagavatam is Parikshit Maharaj is fearless by hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, who is also fearless. That is the result of associating with the Bhagavat. The person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. We will get this fearless consciousness. Okay, last verse.
Sridhar Swami. You want to tell us what happened to Sridhar Swami?
Yeah, he left his body a few years ago in Mayapur. Indrajumna Swami went to pick him up in London and took him to Mayapur. And he had three desires before he left this world. He wanted to see, he wanted to go to Mayapur. He wanted to see the installation of the Panchatattva, and he wanted to be there for Gaurapanima. And then Lord Chaitanya fulfilled all three of his desires, and then on the appearance day of Srivas Thakur, then he went back to Goloka.
Endowed with right vision and strengthened by devotional service and a pessimistic attitude towards material identity, one should relegate his body to this illusory world through his reason. Thus one can be unconcerned with this material world.
Relegate
means to?
Set aside.
Yes, yeah, so what's the... one should relegate his body to this illusory world. It means like delegate.
Set aside.
Set aside?
Put in the back.
Relegate. Well, relegate means, I think, like delegate.
It means secondary importance.
Yeah, like that. It means to move it, relegate, like, okay, now... Does it make sense? Mature guru, do you want to read the purple?
It is sometimes misunderstood that if one has to associate with persons engaged in devotional service, he will not be able to solve the economic problem. To answer this argument, it is described here that one has to associate with liberated persons not directly, physically, but by understanding, through philosophy and logic, the problems of life. It is stated here, Samyak Darshanaya Bhutya, one has to see perfectly, and by intelligence and yogic practice, one has to renounce this world. That renunciation can be achieved by the process recommended in the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The devotee's intelligence is always in touch with the Supreme Personality of God. His attitude towards the material existence is one of detachment, for he knows perfectly well that this material world is the creation of illusory energy. Realizing himself to be part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, the devotee discharges his devotional service and is completely aloof from material action and reaction. Thus, at the end, he gives up his material body, all the material energy, and as pure soul, he enters the kingdom of God.
So, this section of the Bhagavatam is called?
Sankhya
Yoga. Sankhya means to analyze. So one must analyze the nature of this material world. That's what Kapila Deva is teaching us. Understand the nature of the material world is that you will suffer birth and death. It is temporary. And you must understand that you have an eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna, through which can be re-ignited or re-understood through devotional service. So this is why Sankhya Yoga is, as Prabhupada mentions in chapter 25, it is devotional service. Because we analyze this material world as being temporary, why? So then we can become fully absorbed in serving Krishna. So the goal is the same. Following Sankhya, the goal is to become a pure devotee. So Kapila Dev teaches what he teaches in order to make us detached from the material world so that we can then become fully surrendered to Krishna. Any points? Okay.
Are all the questions answered?
The other one is about time, like that. So far, Kapila has not spoken in detail about time. So we'll see in the next two chapters if he goes into detail about time. But I don't know if he goes into great detail. We'll see as it goes, but generically speaking, everything is under the influence of time. So even though it's not going into like a deep analysis like it was earlier in the third canto, there's one chapter 11 or 12 or something, where it speaks about the time factor. So maybe he's not speaking on it generically, but we may say he may speak some more.
In chapter 13 there's some discussion about time.
Some mention?
In chapter 13.
Some mention about time, yeah, but not like a detailed kind of analysis, but something. We'll see as we go through chapter 32. Okay, so tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 32. There will be no class next Monday because next Monday is Radhashtami, so therefore we'll be absorbed in Radhashtami. So. We won't have class on Monday, we'll have class on Tuesday. We'll have tomorrow night, we'll start chapter 32, and then we'll continue next week. Srila Prabhupada.